Hello, everybody, and welcome to the War Room. This one is for the UFC London People's Main Event, the one that everyone's been asking me to break down, Paddy Pimblett against Jordan Leavitt. This is lots of fun, this fight's going to be. Lots of fun for lots of reasons. First of all, because Paddy's always fun to watch, because that's his kind of style. He's a bit mad, he's a bit chaotic. It takes a lot of risks, usually has some kind of spectacular finish, which we'll talk about in a moment. And on the other side, you've got Jordan Leavitt, who's got... good wrestling, good sub-defense, good sub-attacks. He's an awkward southpaw that has lots of kicks and he's quite patient on the feet. Not massively powerful in his striking, but can definitely catch Paddy if he's running in, if Paddy's not careful. But I do give Paddy the strength and the power advantage in this one. Okay, quick tale of the tape. So Paddy Pimblett with a record of 18-3, Jordan Leavitt with a record of 10-1. Paddy with a slight height and reach advantage and a finishing capability, as we were talking about. Six TKOs on his record compared to one for Leavitt, and eight submissions compared to six for Leavitt. So, you know, both fairly dangerous on the ground. Paddy's is far more about chaos and quick fire submissions. It's, you know, one of the reasons why. First of all, he's a fan favorite to watch, and second of all, why a lot of people there's a lot of buzz around his fights, because you know it's going to be relentless. It was all the way through Cage Warriors, and since he's come to the UFC, he's had two fights in the UFC. They've both been absolute barn burners. They both kind of keep you on the edge of your seat. You're not exactly sure what to expect, and I also don't think Paddy knows what to expect either, which shows to me that he's got that real kind of. That flow state attack, which I've spoken about in the other breakdown that I've just done for Hermanson. My goodness, it shows I'm fried my brain is. Yeah, for Jack Hermanson against Chris Curtis. There's a sequence in that where you can see from the initiation to the conclusion of the sequence, it's like a steady flow. Say steady, it was about 49 seconds or something. But Paddy's the same. You know, he's had a few fights. 18 finishes, 11 first round. He's very good at catching people cold. He's very good at working quick. Doesn't mean he starts like a maniac, because usually we see about 30 or 60 seconds where he's kind of feeling them out and testing to see what they're going to do. But then once he's decided he's closing that distance, they've got to expect 45 seconds to a minute of attack before he even thinks about slowing down. And usually within that minute or so of constant attack, he's found himself into a better position than where he started. Usually he's in mount, or he's on your back, or he's clamped onto a submission, and you've just realised what's happened, and now you're dealing with something that could be fight ending. Okay, let's just start. Let me show you some clips, because of course I'm expecting you to have all seen Paddy's fights in the UFC. I'm going to show you a couple of clips from his Cage Warriors career. So this first one was Cage Warriors 122 against David Martinez, and the thing I liked about this is it's a good demonstration of exactly what I'm talking about. Patience for a minute or so, and then it's like someone pulls a trigger and it's an automatic gun and it just continues firing, because like you get this kind of patience where he tests and he teases and he sees, and it looks a bit kind of random. Like there'll be the odd low kick and the occasional jab, and he doesn't really commit to any kind of chain attacks. But what I want to show you in this one is you can see there's a good calculation going on here, because what he does, he's got Martinez in front of him here. He's gonna step his back foot forward to his front foot, and he's going to pick up his lead leg. And he's going to do like what I call a high knee slide. It's something that I use quite a lot in Taekwondo, like a hop side kick. You'll see it in Muay Thai, like a hop teep. It's good for stabbing with the front leg, but covering a bit of distance at the same time. So Paddy moves this back leg to the front leg. He's going to lift his lead leg up, and he's going to hop forward off his back foot. So you can see the step. The front leg comes up. Now, if he extends that here, he's going to fall short of his opponent. But because he's now going to readjust this foot, he's going to reach him. And it's just going to poke him in the midsection. It's not enough to stop the fight. It's not enough to drop him to the canvas or whatever. But it's enough to get him to register that he's been jabbed in the stomach with his toes. And what you'll also notice from Martinez is that he sweeps with this lead hand. So he's got backhands covered side of his head, front hand sweeps. But that changes after this kick lands. Because, again, it wasn't hugely impactful, but it was enough to change Martinez's posture. So as the kick comes in, stabs him in the midsection, just pokes his big toe in his belly button. The lead hand sweeps, but the rear hand stays high. But then watch what the rear hand does. Now it drops, and it drops to his midsection because it's hurting. And it's a very subtle change, but that hand now stays there. Now it's not at the side of his head where the target that Paddy's moving on to next is. He's jabbed him in the stomach, he's damaged him. He's dropped his rear hand, but he knows his lead hand is also going to sweep. Now, whether this is a conscious read or a subconscious read, I don't know. But this is how targets are exposed and combinations are pieced together. I would consider this as a combination because one attack relates to the next. Although there's a gap in between, the intention is to chain one to the next. We go jab to the midsection. Martinez drops his rear hand and it stays dropped. And Paddy's going to back him up to the fence. We're going to see the same footwork again. Camera angle change here. There's the footwork. Back foot moves to the front foot. Lead leg lifts up. But look where Martinez is. Back hand is down. Lead hand is ready to sweep away to cover that jab to the midsection. But this time the hand is not covering the head because the elbow's dropped to cover the midsection. And that's why this foot smacks him on the side of the face. And it's not one shot and he's unconscious. It's one shot then starts the chain of attack for the rest to follow. Let me just play this through slow-mo. So we go. Step up. Stings him with the shot and then swarms him because this is Paddy's style. Now you're doomed. Now he's on your case and he's going to run flying knee. He's going to maintain some space. He's very good at reading targets. But then often this happens and you'll have seen this in... Was it in the Vargas fight? I think this happened in the Kazula-Vargas fight again. He uses this a lot because often when he's swarming someone, he gives double underhooks. People come in, they grab his body and they run in and they start to try and take him down, which is most likely what Levitt's going to do if he's under this kind of pressure. So the body lock is grabbed by Martinez, who's running forward, trying to get control of him. And then you see the footwork of Paddy. Left foot back, right foot replaced, his hips are turning out and he throws his leg across the center line. But the momentum's not really working for him. He's going to reset his feet one more time. Hang on a minute. There we go. There's the better one. The right leg goes across the midsection and then he's pulling. And you can see he's got this overhook here. He's also put a bar across his opponent's thighs. So there's nothing to stop him going straight forward now. Because he's already committed to this body lock. He's already driven the momentum forward. So Paddy's going to keep that momentum going and he's going to redirect it over his hip. And at this point here, his opponent's loaded onto his hip. You'll see him in a second, his feet are going to be off the floor because Paddy's going to drive his hips up. And now his legs are off the floor. And you can see him pivoting over that point on Paddy's hip. He's rolling over that onto the floor. Beautiful. And then as he lands, and this is the benefit in these chaotic flows, much like we saw with Jack Hermanson getting David Branch spinning, there's a chaotic moment where for a second, as his opponent resets his base and turns back to flat, Paddy goes straight over with his knee and takes mount. So there's not a moment to breathe here. Now he's attacking again. You're going to get some ground and pound. He's going to try and scramble because he feels like he should because he's been taken down. He's been, launched through the air. Now Paddy's on his back with two hooks in and he's being ground and pounded. And this guy's in a scrambling mindset right now. So as he's scrambling here, of course, he's getting punched. He's not really thinking about the arm being the attacker of the choke. And then Paddy stretches him out. Lovely control. Look at that deep bite with his hooks. And then there's the rear naked choke. Now that is about as typical a Paddy Pimblett fight as you can get. There's patience, there's a moment, he's staring at his opponent, and then there's an opening. And he follows through with that opening with everything. And it's a flow state, attack, attack, attack. And if it doesn't work, then he'll pull back a second. And because we know he's picked up his conditioning considerably, since his earlier career, and he's moved up a weight class, which I think suits him as well, now we're seeing a much better version of Paddy that can come back and regroup and go again and come back and regroup and go again. So you've not only got to deal with this first 90 seconds of onslaught where he gets most of his fights won, but then you have to deal with the reload and the reload and the reload. Now, unfortunately for Martinez, there wasn't a reload. This was the start and finish of it. But as the opponents get better, of course, we will see more of those challenges for him. But with the conditioning on the rise and with his confidence, as well as him constantly adding to his skills, I'm excited. You know, these are the kind of fighters that are really fun to watch because they allow the fight to flow. They don't try and hold and control it and slow it down. And, you know, that can become quite stagnant sometimes. It's one thing that you can always be assured of with Paddy Pimblett's fights. If they're stagnant, it's nothing to do with him. it will always be his opponent trying to slow it down because he likes that chaos. You know, he likes the high energy atmospheres. It was the same when he was walking out as he is when he's fighting. This is where you see that hip launch. You can see the reset of the feet there and the chop into the lead knee and then pulls him over. Really nice work. And you can imagine how much that slam feels good as well. Full weight of Paddy landing on him, which is something that DC uses quite well. You'll see him, Dan Henderson picks him up and launches him, or Gustafsson spins him 360 in the air. So when they land, they're not quite sure where the sun and the moon is. And it lands on him full power there and then immediately progresses to mount. Like, he makes the most of the chaos because he's in that moment, he's allowing it to flow through. There's not a rigorous thought process that's slowing him down. And there's quite a consistency to this as well. You know, 8 submissions on his record, 5 rear naked chokes, 2 flying triangles. I'll come back to that in a minute. It's very rare that people have 2 flying triangles on their record, let alone 1. Lovely clamp here, nice squeeze, and he's gotten better with this as well. You know, there have been times in his fights against Sorum Back, for example, where he was on his back and he's squeezing, couldn't get the finish. With that additional conditioning that we've seen, with the growth, the physicality of him going from featherweight to lightweight, I feel like he's far more dangerous when he is clamped onto a submission as well. But on the other side, you've got someone who is largely being underestimated for a lot of different reasons. And he is shorter. He does have a shorter reach. He looks less impactful when he strikes. He doesn't look in the same kind of condition that Paddy is. Paddy looks big, even for lightweight. He looks big. But what we can't underestimate about Levitt is that he's got a lot of skills. His foundation is high school wrestling, and you can see that in his game because there are 2 sides to his grappling game. He doesn't really want to be on the feet, but then neither of these guys do too much. They both do the majority of their best work on the ground, whether that's ground and pound or submissions. But because he's got that wrestling base, he has the 2 sides of the game that he can rely on, and sometimes we see him take people down and establish a good top position and control them. Other times, we'll see him taken down and use his jiu-jitsu or his submission attacks to be able to either reverse the position or create some kind of chaotic scramble where, you know, he can then capitalize on top position or whatever. He could use either in this fight. He's only got 33% takedown defense, so I do feel like if Paddy decides he's going to take him down, he's probably going to be able to get him there, especially if he's consistent and aggressive with it. I do wonder, though, how, you know, the longer this fight goes, the more Levitt starts to lean onto his wrestling and decides he wants to control him in top position, because Paddy on the feet can be very, very difficult to read, very chaotic. And Levitt likes to be on the outside, you know, kind of a timid southpaw, poking with his legs and not really being the aggressor in the striking range. So if Paddy then starts flying at him with stuff, the most likely scenario in my mind is that he's going to grab him with that body lock and then start to try and take him down. And that's where Paddy's, you know, his nice judo throws come into play, because he's going to have already given those double underhooks, which means he's going to have to start doing some kind of sacrifice, some kind of, you know, last ditch attempt, last chance saloon kind of takedowns. This is what I'm talking about. So Levitt's got a good clamp here, and there's, you know, there are a few different examples of this, and he doesn't always have to take the fight to the floor. He can sometimes initiate the takedown and end up on the floor with a different position. He is quite confident in his ability to attack and to create movement, so he doesn't always necessarily have to end up on top position. But when he does end up on top position, he looks quite strong. He looks quite solid in his base. This is Matt Sales, and what you'll see here is a nice reap takedown, which, as I was saying, you know, it brings the hips together. So if there's momentum involved in these in these exchanges, this is where Paddy can start to step across. But what you'll see here is Levitt is going to hook this leg and he's going to circle him off the fence to where there's no base, and he's going to just drop him onto the floor. But look how little space there is all the way through this. He hooks him, and then he places his foot. Once he feels the momentum's going, there's no way his opponent's going to stop that. Now he reestablishes this foot. And this might seem like a strange observation, but what you'll notice at the end of his fights is that he drops into a splits position. He's very flexible. And this works one of two ways. In the bottom position, of course, flexibility allows you to do rubber guard type of stuff, attack with more unorthodox submissions from tighter, more compressed positions, which is useful for a variety of things in jiu-jitsu from the bottom. BJ Penn was fantastic at it. Of course, you know, Eddie Bravo's made the rubber guard system famous from attacking off of his back. There's also a benefit when you're flexible from the top position. And what you'll notice is Levitt lands here. He's able to spread his base. Because of his hip dexterity, there's nothing keeping his hips and knees and his you know, his arse high on the floor. He's able to really spread his base and get his weight to the floor to really keep on top of his opponent. Here we go. So foot goes down, drops his opponent to the floor, and then once he establishes this side control, he really spreads his hips. So he's got a knee in the armpit here. Here we go. This is a better position. You can see how low he is here. Now, this position here, it gives him a very wide base, and it also keeps his weight down onto that top leg of his opponent. So although he's got quite chaotic attacks from the underside, and he does like to keep the fight moving if he needs to from the bottom, once he's on top position, he's very good at slowing things down. He's very good at kind of, okay, let me just spread my weight and just let you settle down here for a minute. Just, you know, it's like kind of like a pacifying position. And then once you've started to settle and you've gone, okay, we're going to have a breather here, a mutual breather, then he postures up and starts to strike, but never in a chaotic way where he gives you any space to start moving, which is where the challenge is going to be for Paddy if he does end up on the floor, because I think Levitt is going to try and take away as much of his movement as possible. And because Paddy's quite a chaotic fighter, he can waste energy in areas where Levitt might be able to slow him down a bit. Like what we need to see from Paddy before we start, you know, projecting him into the top 10, top 15 is, you know, what's happened if he's challenged, you know, past the first round. What happens if he gets tired, if he's put under a lot of pressure. I feel like this is the kind of fight that he could find some pressure. I do feel like the pressure is going to have to be on the floor, though. I don't feel like this fight offers him a great deal on the feet. So this might be quite a comfortable one for Paddy to keep it on the feet and to you know, show us he's developing striking. That doesn't mean Levitt can't take it to the floor. It just means that Paddy's going to have to show his takedown defense as well. Okay. Just as Levitt has got submission attacks from the top position and he's very good at controlling and ground and pounding, he's also, with 33% takedown offense, I would argue that some of the times he's taken down, it's not because he can't stop the takedown. It's because he's choosing to allow the fight to go to the floor. This is a good example here because, and this is Matt Sales as well, the same guy that he's already taken down and controlled. So I kind of feel like if he wanted to wrestle in this fight, he could have done more to stop this takedown, let me put it that way. But what you'll notice is that he's got this wrap around the body. He's got a hold around Matt Sales. So he's got some control of his body as he's being taken down. And Matt Sales is going to pick his legs up and just sit him to the floor. Now, this is the position where it starts to get interesting for me. Because once they've landed, the contact that Levitt is going to try with this leg, it keeps Matt Sales moving. So he kicks that leg over, which forces Matt Sales to pull the legs together of Jordan Levitt. There we go. Hands together. Now he's controlling the legs. But again, this is where the hip dexterity, the flexibility comes into play, and where this body lock comes into play that he grabbed before they went down. So he's got control of Matt Sales' body here. What he's going to do now is he's going to extend his legs and his hips to separate the arms of Matt Sales, which are around his legs. But as he does this, he only does it to a point, so the grip breaks. The right leg stays where it is, so both legs moving, Right leg stays where it is. Left leg keeps going. And what you'll notice is that it pulls his grip apart. Hands are together. We're looking here. Hands are together. Pulls the grip apart. And as soon as he feels this arm of Sales is off this leg, he's going to throw it with the intention of catching him in a inverted triangle. It's a really nice setup, and there's no way that he didn't know exactly what he was doing in this process, especially because his reaction at the end of it was, "I got that submission I've been catching people in the gym." It's like an acknowledged laugh that he's like, I didn't think I was going to get this. It was worth a try, and it worked out. I'll show you what I mean. So this leg work here is really nice. So he extends, and you've got to think he's pulling apart with his legs. He's holding him with his upper body and separating from his lower body. So there's no way that Matt Sales can keep a hold of this. He's upper body on lower body. It's an exchange you can't win. So the legs get pulled. Left leg kicks around and goes over the leg and then clamp. Now, the mistake that Sales makes here is that because this is not in the back of the knee, because it's not there, which is where it would be if it was a closed-up triangle, Sales feels a bit comfortable. He kind of hangs out here for a moment, which allows Levitt to readjust. You'll see him let go of the body in a minute. He readjusts. He takes a second bite on there, but still not locked up. It's still there instead of there where it should be. So there's a bit of room in here, and Sales feels like he may feel a bit safer than he actually is. Now this is re-established, what we're going to see is the hands are going to release of Levitt, and he's going to go in between the legs of his opponent. He's going to dig this arm in. Camera's going to switch to the top, and we're going to see him dig his left arm in. His hand's going to pop out in this position here in a minute. Where are we? There it is. Oh, my circle was kind of off. There it is. So now he's got his hands together. He's around the leg of his opponent. This is the point where he starts to tighten up this triangle. And you can see the reaction on his face, which is why I think he's maybe caught a couple of his teammates in this, kind of like a cheeky move. And now he's managed to get it to work in the fight. And this is kind of how these submissions are discovered ultimately. But this little sequence is really nice. So what you can see him doing here is you can see him, all he's doing is he's just driving his hips forward. So there's drive coming from this direction. And he's trying to straighten this curve here down his spine, which is pulling the shoulder and the body of Matt Sales together. And it's just a very casual, because he's holding it right now. Now, oh, my pen's stopped working. Now, watch his body. You're going to see him breathe. He's going to go, okay, I'll give it a quick squeeze now. And you can see it's almost like a conscious decision he makes. He takes a rest while he's got control of this leg because he knows his opponent's not going anywhere. He's like comfortable here for a moment, keeping a good lock on this triangle, making sure that he's not getting an out. He takes a breath. Oh, let me just play it through. Deep breath. And then you just see he just pulls his body together. And then the laugh, it's like, you know, I don't know, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I just kind of feel like it was something that he's landed a couple of times and he's like, oh, I'm in that position, I'll try it. Takes a few breaths and then he just bites on his opponent and just drives his hips in. Really nice little submission. So the thing is, when it hits the floor, this is where I think this fight gets the most interesting and the most competitive. I feel like on the feet, Paddy's going to be able to have the footwork and the movement and probably the striking power to be able to start winning those exchanges. I'm not saying that he's not going to get caught with some things from Levitt, but I don't feel like they're going to be consequential enough to get his respect. So I feel like Paddy's going to feel quite confident in that close range where he starts to let go, which means that as that range closes down, Levitt is going to find himself with those double underhooks and he's going to start working those trips and reaps where Paddy then starts to launch him with those judo throws. Then they end up on the floor, but where they end up on the floor is a mystery because they could land with Paddy bang in top position like he did against Martinez, or the momentum might continue taking them over because Levitt's a good wrestler and has got good scrambles and he might continue that momentum, which puts him in a dominant position on top. Or he might land up on the bottom and, you know, find himself attacking from the bottom position. Maybe Paddy goes for a takedown because he's feeling confident he can win the fight there, and he finds himself tangled up in that same inverted triangle position. And these are lots of things he's got to think about. The safest thing is to keep a distance and use his striking and his power, height and reach advantage. But if it gets tangled up, Levitt's problems, we can't underestimate him because he's got several different skills that he can throw at you. Talking of several different skills that they can throw at you, the next clip I'm going to show you is from Cage Warriors 90, and this is Alex Savidas, who is a very good grappler and had that kind of machine gun style attack at Paddy, where it was, I'm going to attack you with this and this, and you know, it was not a yelling match from one side in the submission sense. It wasn't one person completely bombarding the other. Like, their fight all the way through, go and watch it. So it's a really nice little back and forth. Their fight was a constant back and forth. It was Paddy would attack, his opponent would reverse the position. Paddy would attack for a heel hook, then his opponent would reverse it and attack for a heel hook. And it was one scramble after the next. There were kimuras and armbar attacks in the process all the way through the first round. And you know, I've just picked out one clip, but this is right where they landed. And you can see his opponent elevates him here. Paddy's got his feet on the fence, but he doesn't manage to stop him, and he finds himself in bottom position. So as Paddy does, you know, then starts to attack, finds himself on a heel hook, which is then reversed by his opponent, who then attacks Paddy's heels. What we saw in this fight was Paddy not only constantly attacking, but also being forced to defend all the time. And he looked good. He looked really good defending. Of course, I expect the levels to be slightly different, and for the opponents that Paddy's going to be coming up against to have, you know, more of a submission attack. I'm not saying Levitt's that guy, but I do feel like his wrestling does add a few credits to his grappling skills. But what I loved about this is, you know, we're a few seconds into the second round. His opponents clearly feel like he's doing better on the ground than he is on the feet, which might be the case in against Levitt. And he closes distance. He's got Paddy up against the fence. And because Paddy's a chaotic flow state fighter and he recognizes this passing moment of opportunity, he jumps a flying triangle and nails it, which is why he's got two on his record, because one worked and he had the confidence to try it again at Cage Warriors 90. And here you'll see it. So you can see his opponent's got an underhook on the far side. So Paddy's whizzed him on the far side here. He's got the control. And now he's grabbed a hold of his head as well. Now, the important thing, you can't see it very well from this angle, is that as you jump, one of your legs clears the shoulder of your opponent. Because he's got the overhook, of course he can't clear this shoulder. So he's got to clear the other side. Watch how high he brings his leg up. Here's his knee coming up. Comes up straight over the shoulder. And then clamps down. The important thing is not only it going up and over, but then once it's cleared the shoulder, look how hard he pulls that heel down. He's trying to close that distance between the two, between his knee and his heel, just like Jack Hermanson against David Branch, which is in the other war room that you can check out. Closes that distance down real quick. So as he lands and there's a bit of a scramble, a bit of chaos, even as his opponent starts to squeeze out of here, he's got enough of a bite on him to stay nice and tight. He's hooked around the arm, he's grabbing him on the back of the head, and then he's readjusting his legs to pull him further into this triangle. And, you know, even when he gets his foot onto the back of his calf, it's still not perfect. You can see that little bit of space in there. But he manages to pull it together, and as his opponent's trying to defend, he cuts the angle, and then his opponent leaves his arm behind, and that becomes the main focus of this. But, you know, he had the triangle as well. Eventually, he would have gone to sleep if it wasn't for that arm being hyperextended. Really nice submission. You know, and landing it from a jumping triangle in the start of the second round shows that he's that constant threat all the time. I do feel like that might be a real handful for Jordan Levitt. I feel like Levitt, that's why he may feel like he's being forced to use his wrestling to try and control the fight and slow it down a bit. Because Paddy is going to feel like a big, strong, explosive individual who's difficult to predict. If it hits the floor, whether Levitt's on top or bottom, same as Paddy, they're both going to be attacking, which means that those ground exchanges will be ferocious. But that does bring the fight far more towards a 50-50 standpoint, whereas if Paddy's able to keep it on the feet, I feel like he might be able to he might be able to dominate this fight with his striking and with his power. Bit chaotic, as I said. It's not like he won't get hit some, but you know, he wins in those striking exchanges based on his physicality and his reach and height. Okay. Just as I've shown you that flying triangle defense from Paddy, it just so happens that on the Contender Series, Levitt had a very similar fight against Jose Flores. A quick fire attack, loads of submissions. We saw great submission defense from Levitt, who consistently engaged in wrestling, even though he was under attack and may have had better success on the feet. But you can see him up against the fence here, weirdly in exactly the same position that Paddy was in against Savidis. He's got the overhook here. He's got the arm connected here, so it's distracted, which means his opponent's going to throw this leg up and clear that shoulder. And the reason I'm showing you this is because not only is this the process of them getting to the floor where then Levitt takes over, but he also is able to read this flying triangle. As soon as his opponent leaps his foot off the canvas, which is there, and you can see him blocking the... you can see his fingertips where he's like blocking the elbow. You can see how Levitt postures up to not allow him to get that leg up and over. And we know he likes a slam. We've seen him slam a few times. Matt Wyman, of course. But then, you know, we've seen him slam several times to get out of submissions and stuff. And then he finds himself in top position. And he's quite happy to stay in top position. Quite happy to wear his opponent down. Constantly trying to chase the Flores' back here and chase his back. But Flores did a good job of defending. You can see this wrist bind here. He's got that handcuff control. Keeps striking him, keeps trying to attack, and Flores is constantly trying to scrape him off his back and not allow him to finish with that rear naked choke. So you can see Levitt goes back to that wrist control here again. And the reason why he's doing that is because it gives him 2 points of control. He's got this control here through the back of the arm, and he's also got this leg ride position, which means that he's able to pressure down into his hips, and he's able to keep driving into his opponent's shoulder with this control on the wrist. So, you know, he's doing a lot of things physically to encourage his opponent to turn away from him, but he's not allowing him to turn too far because he's got this control of the hook. And as you see it from the other angle, you'll actually see him lace his legs together so he can get more downward pressure. It's like a reverse lockdown. Watch this foot here. Watch how it fishes for the leg. So you can see his opponent tries to clear it, and he hooks and laces it over the outside of his leg. His opponent tries to kick it free, and he follows it and then locks it down. So now he's got a good tight bite on that leg. You can see how straight and how under pressure it is, which allows him then to drive down into his through his hips to pressure. And, you know, being in these situations, you feel trapped, you feel quite claustrophobic, you know, when you've got someone like Khabib on top of you doing this, he's smashing you in the face and he's talking at you, and people start to do desperate things, especially as the fight starts to tick away, and you know you're in the last round, and oh, you know, time's running out, and not checking your watch, you won't have a watch on, you know, you're checking the time and you're like, I've got to do something, I've got to reach, I've got to push, I've got to do something. And then you expose yourself. And, you know, for as good as Flores did at keeping Levitt off his back, there was a moment where he took his eyes off the prize and he sat up against the fence and he allowed Levitt to get his hands together on an arm triangle. And here it is. And he wraps around, he's under the neck here, and he's met it from the other side, so he's got the hands together. And now he's going to circle him the opposite way, so now he doesn't need his back for the rear naked choke, and he's going to pull his shoulders to the mat. And look how his shoulder here circles underneath the arm of his opponent to close that space. Now, one thing I will say, and it was the same as the triangle finish, the inverted triangle that I've just shown you as well. One thing I do see with Levitt, and I mentioned this about Pimblett a bit earlier on in the show, when he fought Sorum back, he was on his back, and you would watch that and think to yourself, how is he not finishing this rear naked choke? Surely he's able to create enough pressure, and he wasn't, and he's expended a lot of energy doing it. Levitt has landed two submissions here, the inverted triangle and this arm triangle here, both of which he uses. It's a compressive, physical, upper body strength to create the pressure. It's not it's not a mechanical, let me move off to the side and put, like I was talking about with RDA on the Fazeev breakdown, you know, where he wedges his knee underneath his hips and he puts himself in the right position. So the pressure feels a lot more intense than what it would from a physical muscle squeeze. Like 11 fights in, that might not be a lesson that Levitt's learned yet. He might get clamped onto something on Paddy Pimblett and be squeezing for the life of him because he feels like, I've got this anaconda, I've got this guillotine, I've got this rear naked choke, and he might squeeze, and Paddy's just escapes and he's out. So he might waste a lot of energy doing this. You'll see what I'm talking about. If you've not watched it, go back and watch the Fazeev RDA war room, and you'll see what I'm talking about. This knee here is holding him down. It's not really what you want to be doing in this position. What he wants is to put that knee underneath him, which is where RDA would put it or where Glover Teixeira would put it. This is like a kind of a bit of a safety net position, because if he does lose this position, he's still got the hook in so he can take his back. But what it does mean is that he has to use all of his upper body power to close that gap, that noose around his head and shoulder. And you know, that becomes a physical expenditure as opposed to a mechanical technique. Just a minor observation, but it might be something that can work in Paddy's favour if he does get caught in a deep submission. If he's able to just take a breath and be calm, Levitt might not have the fundamentals correct to be able to offset some of that physical energy that he would have to spend to get the submission finished. I think it's an interesting fight. Of course, you know, it looks like the table's set for Paddy to win, and I do expect him to do very well in this one. But I also can't underestimate Jordan Levitt. Like, I am convinced that you just cannot predict mixed martial arts. You can't predict what's going to happen. There are so many different variables. There are so many different openings, forearms, gloves, momentum, nerves, anxiety, the crowd, the emotion, you know, the expectations, you know, from the outside, from the inside. You know, there's a lot of pressure going into these things, and it can make or break you. And Jordan Levitt, much like a Brian Barberena, can be someone that people can look at and go, yep, I'm going to underestimate him, and I'm going to know I'm doing it at the time. And then they can surprise you, and you think to yourself, shouldn't have underestimated him. I don't think Paddy will, but he also can't take his eyes off the prize and look too far ahead, because Levitt is a very tricky customer. And with that high school wrestling background, it might be just enough to you know, top up his grappling skills to give him the advantage there. Interesting fight. Enjoy it, and I'll see you next time.